still in a spin over the wings question. Only a female can undo her messes.
Messes,
Jeb says, his frown intensifying. Gripping my arms gently, he turns me around and stares into my eyes.
When I was with the sprites, Gossamer mentioned what you did to the ocean. She didn't call it fixing a mess. She said it was a test. And even weirder, she seems resentful that you accomplished it, that you're here at all. Something's not adding up. We're not doing another thing to help Bug Juice until he's straight with us.
He's already told me the truth. He told me the steps I have to take. I tell Jeb what I learned in Morpheus's room, though I'm not brave enough to share details about our melding moment or the magical chess piece puppet show.
So, you're just gonna take his word?
He has noble motivations. His friend's in trouble.
Stop humanizing the guy, Al!
Jeb slams a palm against the mirror wall. The moth shadows dart away as if startled.
He's not of our world, okay? And he has this power to get inside your head. I watched you with him in the clearing. You can't think straight when he's around.
The accusation revives my anger about London. So you're gonna play that card? Me not being strong enough to think for myself?
This is different. Look what's happening to you.
But I can stop it by doing one more thing, that's all.
Oh yeah? From where I'm standing, the more you do for him, the more you become like him.
No, you're wrong. I tug on one of my braids, wishing I could convince myself as easily as I spout the words. Wishing I could deny that the longer I'm here, the more deeply this place is ingrained in my blood. Or that Morpheus is the tourniquet, twisted tightly around my veins. Jeb grinds his teeth so hard his jaw jerks.
We're not going to argue about this, Al. That's what he wants. I won't let him do it.
Do what? He wraps the hair I'm playing with around his wrist and tugs me close, bowing his head so our brows touch.
Come between us.
My entire body goes soft and warm at the gruff possessiveness in his voice, but he doesn't have a right to it. Did you forget? There's already someone between us. You're moving with her to London.
I was an idiot. To think for one second that being on the other side of the ocean could give me any control.
A fiery knot tightens in my chest, and I take a step back. Control? Over what? My life? Reality check, Mr. Oblivious. I'm not your kid's sister anymore. I'm done being shelved with all your other responsibilities, somewhere between clipping toenails and changing dirty socks. I shove him aside and start toward the glass chair, determined to wait there for Morpheus. Without warning, Jeb snags one of the rings in my belt and spins me around. In one smooth motion, he lifts me onto the narrow, crescent-shaped table. My skin trembles beneath his touch as he scoots me all the way against the wall, his hips wedged between my thighs. We're level, face to face. The fluttery feeling fills my head, and in the shadow of my darker side, a rush of satisfaction wells up, a perverse thrill that I can stoke his emotions to this gut-deep reaction. I brace my hands against his shoulders to maintain space between us, but it's only for show. My bluff fades to weak-kneed enthusiasm the instant he snags my wrists and pulls them down, leaning in so our noses almost touch.
Reality check right back at ya,
he says. His breath a hot rush in the chilly room.
I know you're not a kid anymore. You think I'm blind?
His fingers lace through mine, pinning my arms against the cold, smoothless mirrors so our heartbeats pound against each other.
You're the one who's oblivious, because there's nothing brotherly about the way you make me feel.
My brain shuts down. I must have swallowed every moth spirit from here to Kingdom Come. I can swear they're rippling through my stomach. Jeb releases my fingers and cups my face in his hands, barely touching me, like I'm breakable.
It's me I'm losing control of. Hundreds of sketches and I still can't get enough of your face.
He traces the dimple in my chin with his thumb.
Your neck.
His palm moves along my throat.
Your...
Both hands find my waist and drag me off the table, so we're standing toe to toe.
I'm not wasting another second drawing you.
He whispers against my lips.
When I can touch you instead.
He presses his mouth to mine. A spark, hot and electric, jumps between us. Shock and sensation shimmer through me, aglow with his heat and flavor. 6 years of secret desire. 6 years of denying that he's the orbit of my world. To think, he's been running from me too. Adrift in disbelief and pleasure, I freeze. My arms hang limp at my sides, fists opening and closing. Jeb's mouth vibrates against mine in a groan. He coaxes my hands around his neck, bending closer. He tastes amazing, like chocolate and salt. Familiar yet new and exciting. I clutch my fingers around his neck. The feelings I've been suppressing uncoil and thrash inside me like electric eels, shocking me to life. Every sensory receptor hums, hyper-aware. I taste him, breathe him, feel him. Only him. My lips follow his, pulsing slow and soft and warm. His labrae scrapes my chin, a harsh and sexy counterbalance. His hands guide my jaw, showing me how to tilt my face. He teases my lips open with his. I run my tongue along his teeth, finding that crooked incisor before his tongue catches mine. Maybe I'm breathing too hard. Maybe I'm slobbering too much. Maybe I'll never measure up to the other girls he's been with. But it doesn't matter. Because of all the things I've experienced on this journey, shrinking and growing, flying sprites, living chess pieces, not a one of them is more magical than this moment. His kisses fade to nuzzles along my face and neck, soft and poignant.
"Al," he whispers. "You taste so sweet, like honeysuckle."
"Don't," I murmur in a daze. He draws back, eyes heavy and dark.
"You want me to stop?"
"No. I've fallen asleep, praying for you to look at me like this, to touch me like this. Don't break my heart." Moth shadows glide above him in the mirrored ceiling, distracting me from the fierceness of his frown.
"I'd cut mine out first."
I believe he would. Stretching to tiptoe, I clasp his ponytail. This time, I kiss him. He responds with a spine-tingling growl, fingers digging into my hips. I skim my gloved palms down to find his chest, seeking the scars. Stopping at the chains on his waist, I grip them until the metal bites into my fingers and back us against the wall. A chill seeps into my shoulder blades from the mirror, but the perfect fit of his body against mine lights my blood with 1,000 tiny fires, consuming me. We're both so into it, neither of us hears the footsteps until a snarl breaks us apart. We turn to find Morpheus standing there with enough rage in his black eyes to send the devil packing for heaven. Jeb tugs his fingers from the rings in my belt, but keeps a hand at my lower back. I touch my lips. They're throbbing and gluttonous, hungry for more.
"Well now, isn't this cozy?"
Morpheus's voice isn't liquid this time. It grates like rusted nails along my eardrums. He peels off his gloves and slaps them against his palm, wings droopy and trailing the floor like a cape.
"Perhaps you might give Alyssa her lipstick back. We haven't time to find more before dinner."
Jeb swipes my gloss from his mouth. I lick my lips, struck by an inexplicable stab of guilt. Morpheus's lullaby plays softly in my head, melancholy and pinched. The words to the song seemed to have been altered to fit his mood. Little blossom in peach and red, trapping boys with your pretty head. Tease and play, be coy and smart, for you will one day break his heart. The lullaby sours to shrieking notes in my ears, making me wince. Grunting deep in his chest, Morpheus turns to a mirror and brushes his clothes with his gloves. He's wearing a white flouncy shirt under a red brocade jacket that swings at his thighs. It's double-breasted with brassy buttons on both lapels. His pants resemble tights, crushed red velvet. Black lace-up boots stop just at his shins. He could be Romeo straight out of Shakespeare's play if not for the blue hair and wings. He whips his wingspan to its full magnificence. The jewels at the tips of his eye markings flash with his temper, from red to green.
"Don't you know, Elfin Knight," he turns back to us, "that it is very untoward for a god to proposition his innocent charge?"
I frown. What, do I have the word prude stamped across my forehead?
"You don't know anything about me."
Morpheus twists his mouth into a wry grin.
"Perhaps you were simply pretending then, to blush like an unblemished peach."
Jeb drags me behind him.
"She's not having this discussion with you."
Morpheus huffs.
"A little late for chivalry. Had anyone else seen that display, your masquerade as a knight would have ended before it ever began. Did you forget to tell him about a knight's first order, pet? About keeping his hands and emotions in check?"
Morpheus's attention falls to his right shoulder. Gossamer peers out from beneath his hair. She and Jeb exchange a glance. Morpheus's eyes fall back on me, slicing like onyx blades. All I want to do is bask in the memory of my first kiss. Instead, I'm wrestling the notion that I've betrayed some nether realm guy I haven't seen in years, and for some reason, the thought of hurting him is unbearable. Jeb's stance stiffens.
"Change of plans," he says. "Al's not going to help you play out this little game, whatever it is. You're sending us back. Now."
Morpheus lifts one side of his mouth in a sneer. He addresses Gossamer again while still staring at me.
"Seems you were wrong. You told me the mortal wasn't a threat. Perhaps you underestimated the allure of our crafty Alyssa."
Gossamer studies her teensy feet. Her wings flap slowly like a butterfly's at rest.
"I thought he preferred someone..."
"Shush! That's not your secret to tell!" Morpheus shouts.
The volume of his voice knocks Gossamer off her perch. She flutters in midair, hands slapped over pointed ears. Morpheus touches a finger to his mouth.
"Read my lips, loose-tongued little spritling. Get the bloody box. It's time to show our maiden and a toy soldier what kind of welcome they'll receive should they turn their backs on their one ally."
Gossamer whisks out of the corridor.
"And bring me my cajolery hat," Morpheus calls after her.
His command is still echoing when he spins on his heel to study us. Smug, he coaxes his gloves on.
"There's a problem with your request, pseudo-elf. I can't simply send you back, and Alyssa knows this."
Jeb casts a glance over his shoulder, eyes wide with questions.
"Oh, dear me."
Morpheus slaps a palm to his cheek, as if stunned.
"Were you too busy to talk about anything pertinent? Or perhaps our innocent maiden was feeling guilty for the money she borrowed from your other girlfriend's handbag, and you, being the noble knight, decided to comfort her?"
Jeb turns to me.
"Wait. That money in your pencil box? Tay did leave her purse at the shop? You stole from her?"
Morpheus leans in between us.
"Well,
How else was our Alyssa to skip off to London to find me?
Jeb's gaze doesn't budge, heavy with accusation.
I can't believe you lied to my face. You stole money to get a fake passport and planned to go to London all along.
Two for two, Morpheus taunts behind me now. A liar and a thief. That pedestal's getting slippery, isn't it, little plum?
I elbow him hard enough that his wings rustle. I did what had to be done to help Allison, I grind out to Jeb, disregarding Morpheus's smug smile as he walks by in my periphery. I only borrowed the money. I'm going to pay it back. Morpheus stops beside Jeb.
She has a point. Motivation always justifies the crime. That's the law of the land here.
Hear that? Jeb says, piercing me with the mockery in his voice. The local cockroach has given you his stamp of approval, and you wonder why I can't trust you to go off on your own.
A tiny fire burns at the base of my throat, an annoying need to justify myself rising like acid. I had a plan.
Oh, great plan.
Jeb motions to the room around us.
Like I could have ever seen this coming, Jeb.
Before Jeb can respond, Morpheus steps between us, gripping us each by the shoulder.
Beg pardon, lovebirds, he intones, but as much as I'm enjoying this, your quarrel is in danger of upstaging my grand unveiling.
He motions to the door, where Gossamer has returned with 20 other sprites. 5 of them carry a red top hat with a wide black band holding a peacock's feather in place. A string of iridescent blue moth corpses drapes the brim like a garland. The other sprites bring a black bag too heavy to lift, so they drag it across the floor.
All the guests have arrived, Master,
Gossamer says, her tiny voice quavering. She and her companions drop the top hat onto Morpheus's head while the others leave the bag next to our backpack.
Introduce the appetizers and have the harp play a tune.
Morpheus angles his hat. The dead moths tremble with the adjustment, as if they're struggling to escape.
We'll be there shortly.
Gossamer nods and trails behind the others, glancing over her shoulder once before she flits into the adjoining hall. Morpheus snatches up the bag. As he strolls toward the glass table, his satiny wings skim my left boot. A vibration hums through my birthmark and up my shin before it stops to settle in my thigh, warm and titillating. Frowning, I slide my leg back and tap my boot to ease the sensation. Jeb watches me with disapproval in his eyes. Morpheus folds down the bag to expose a tall silver hat box flocked with white velvet. I've never seen anything like it, even in my dreams. Curiosity lures me to the table. Morpheus gestures to the chair, playing the role of gentleman host again. I'll stand, I murmur. I'd like to blacken his already black eyes for stirring up things between Jeb and me just to get back at us for the kiss. Although I'm strangely intrigued that he cares enough to be jealous in the first place. Jeb settles behind me and squeezes my shoulders, still my protector, even when he's angry. I lean into his body heat, grateful for it. Morpheus shoots a disgusted glance at us, then drags the box to the center of the table. It's actually made of pewter. White velvet roses cover the sides, and engravings curl across the top of the hinged lid in some archaic language. The longer I stare at the words, the more legible they become. Is that another manifestation of the Liddell curse? That this language comes naturally to me?
Time for introductions,
Morpheus says, opening the lid an instant before I make sense of the first sentence. Dark, oily fluid sloshes inside the box. A sheet of glass over the top holds the liquid inside. Morpheus gives the contents a jiggle, and a whitish object bobs toward the surface. It reminds me of a magic eight ball I once saw at a garage sale. The black plastic ball had a window inset. Blue fluid filled the core, and a white die would drift up to the window, marked with phrases on every side. All you had to do was ask the ball a question, roll it around in your hands, and then turn it over. Your answer would appear in the window on the die. Everything from most likely to ask again later. Only this floating object is almost the size of a honeydew melon and oval-shaped. Thick whitish strands swirl around it, attached to it. Morpheus gives the box another shake. The orb spins to reveal a face. It's a head. Yelping, I battle the bile rising in my throat. Jeb curses and tries to turn me to him, but I can't look away. The liquid must be some kind of formaldehyde. Why would Morpheus have a pickled head in a pewter hat box? What kind of psycho is he?
"Wake up, fair one,"
Morpheus whispers, a strained tenderness to the request. I watch, mortified, as he taps a finger along the glass, tracing the face's closed, crystallized lashes. When the eyes flip open, I almost jump out of my skin. The thing's alive. Recognition dawns on me from the chess piece reenactment. It's the Ivory Queen, even more beautiful than her jade counterpart, as delicate and pale as moonlight. Black tattoo-like marks line both temples in a network of veins, as if dragonfly wings were pressed onto a stamp pad, then transferred to the skin. Her eyes are so light blue they're almost colorless. Long lashes curl upward on each blink. They're just like her eyebrows, silvery and crystalline as if coated with ice. At the outer corners, two black lines dip down to her cheekbones and end in teardrop shapes. It's like she's weeping ink. Pale pink lips, as curved and lovely as a heart, open to an adoring smile as her gaze falls on Morpheus. She tries to talk. He leans close, sweeping his gloved palm lovingly across her encased cheek. She tries to talk again, but can't be heard through the liquid and glass. Jeb and I stand there, imprisoned in our own silence. Morpheus breaks the hush.
"This is a Jabberlock box. It can hold an entire being within, though only the face appears. You've heard the saying, off with their heads, from the book you carry."
I glance at my gloved palms, thinking about my scars. That's not the only place I've heard the words, and Morpheus knows it. Is this what Allison meant when she said she didn't want me to lose my head?
"Well, this is the origin of that phrase,"
Morpheus finishes.
"Little Alice took it much too literally. It used to be a standard punishment here in Wonderland, though now it's considered barbaric. It's worse than any prison, for its occupant can be seen but not heard. Their jabbers are locked away."
The box shakes under Morpheus's hands. The queen's features change from adoring to desperate. She thrashes back and forth, and bubbles churn the surface. Her hair swirls like albino seagrass. Morpheus wraps his arms around the box to keep it from bouncing off the table. When her mouth stretches in a muted scream, he slams the lid shut. His complexion pales. He rewraps the box in the bag before I can see the inscription again. Smoothing his cuffs over his gloves with trembling fingers, he sighs.
"I didn't wish to upset her. She's at peace when she's left alone. But if she's not freed soon, all her memories will be lost forever."
"You care about her," I say, with an unexpected twang of envy. In my long-lost memories of us as children, it was always just the two of us. We got each other on every level. Morpheus made me feel adored, special, important. I never considered him doing the same for someone else as a man. "Morpheus, what is she to you?" He doesn't answer. Not aloud, anyway. His expression is hazy and troubled, and the jewels around his eyes twinkle from silver to black, like stars peering down on a storm-swept night. Alice's confession from the trial comes back to me.
Ivory was, in fact, very fond of Mr. Caterpillar.
Judging by how Morpheus looked at the Queen just now, by how she looked at him, he returned to her castle after his metamorphosis. I imagine his elegant fingers tracing her skin, his soft lips on hers. That stab of envy evolves to something much uglier, a covetous twist of emotion I can't even put a name to. What's wrong with me? Why should I care about Morpheus's love life when I've finally kissed Jeb after all these years? Morpheus's wings flap wide, then close again. The dreamlike fog draping his features is replaced by suppressed rage.
In this realm, the mirrors are gateways. But the hall in which we stand leads only to other parts of Wonderland. The gateways back to your world are inside the white and red castles, and they are connected to the Queen's. Ivory's portal is frozen due to her state, and will remain so until she's freed by the person who put her into this box. That leaves only the Red Castle's portal. I understand you've already met Rabid White.
I gulp and nod.
So you know how well received you would be in the Red Province. Set foot there, and you could end up in a box just like this.
An image of me or Jeb locked in dark liquid flashes into my mind. Jeb must feel my shiver because his grip on my shoulders tightens.
So who would put Ivory in there?
He asks. Morpheus removes his hat and sets it next to the bag, leaving his hair a mass of glowing blue tangles.
After Queen Red was exiled to the wilds, she was never seen again. Her stepsister, Grenadine, married the king and became queen. A woman so forgetful, she could never handle wearing the crown. And now her king wants to give her two.
Morpheus drags a glittering diamond tiara from the bag.
I've a spy stationed in the Red Castle. When the White Court came to me with news of Ivory's fate some weeks ago, I sent word for my contact to steal the Jabberlock box. I'm harboring Ivory here, along with a crown, to keep them safe from Grenadine and King Red. If they control both the Red and White portals, good luck ever getting home.
He tucks the tiara away again.
All this will be ameliorated once Alyssa finds the Vorpal Sword. It's the most powerful weapon in Wonderland. I can use it to force them to grant Ivory's freedom. Her portal will be open to you then.
Jeb levels his gaze at Morpheus.
Let me get this straight. You lured us down here with promises to save Al's mother, knowing all along we'd have no way home until we freed your freaking girlfriend?
Morpheus lifts a finger.
Seeing as we're laying out the facts, let's not forget that you weren't invited to begin with. If this is too much for your delicate constitution, mortal dreg, you're welcome to stay safely tucked away in my guest room until it all blows over. I go where Al goes, dances with bugs, and just so you know, if anything happens to her, I'll pin you by your wings to a corkboard and use you for dart practice.
Jeb and Morpheus's standoff is only background noise. I'm here to break the curse for Allison. That's all that matters. Only I should never have dragged Jeb into this. If I could just have an instant replay. Something the flower zombies said nudges my memory. Something about time moving backward in Wonderland. What had they meant by that? It's obviously not a literal truth. Time has been moving forward since Alice's visit, or things wouldn't be in such a state. A sense of urgency rolls over me. Allison goes for electroshock on Monday. I need to get to that tea party and wake up the guests. Jeb looks at me.
And how are you supposed to do that? Give a magical kiss to the half-baked hat maker?
Morpheus secures his hat on his head and tilts it.
Half-baked? Herman Hattington's skills happen to be exceptional. No one can custom fit a hat like he can. And as for a kiss waking him, wrong fairy tale, Prince Charming. Although I assure you,
Morpheus grazes my temple with his thumb.
Our little love is going to bring us all a happily ever after.
Jeb catches Morpheus's wrist in midair. Their gazes meet.
No touching,
Jeb snarls. Morpheus jerks his hand free.
Our dinner guests know why Alyssa is here. Since they've been missing their excursions to the human realm, they're willing to welcome her in hopes they'll get the white portal back. But should they realize you are an outsider who dropped in without an invite, they'll not be so accepting. For your own preservation, you must be convincing as an elfin escort. Elfin knights are even-tempered and dispassionate. Time to pretend you have such virtues.
I sense the tension in the air as Jeb struggles to contain his temper. The two face off, staring each other into the ground. I shove an arm between them. Shouldn't we get to the banquet? Frowning, Morpheus fishes Alice's white gloves from his lapel. The grass stains and dirt have been washed off.
We'll need the lice fan.
He directs the command to Jeb, who pauses as if he might deck him. I tug on his elbow, a muted plea. Jeb stalks down the corridor to retrieve the backpack. Morpheus and I study each other in electrified silence. I can't decide what upsets me most. My evolving netherling traits, the ticking clock on Allison's treatments, the jabberlock box, why Morpheus seems to care that I kiss Jeb when he's involved with someone else, or worst of all, why it upsets me to know about his love for Ivory. The thoughts scatter around me like broken glass when Jeb returns. Morpheus tucks the fan inside his lapel along with the gloves.
Leave your baggage here. If anything goes awry during dinner, come immediately to this hall. It is isolated, nigh impossible to find unless you know the secret entrance. Gossamer will see that you're sent to the tea party should we have any unexpected guests.
Unexpected guests, I ask?
Guests of murderous or malicious intent. You are, after all, a fugitive from the Red Court.
Morpheus rubs his hands together, as if relishing the thought of trouble.
I'm famished. Let us feast!
Chapter 12. The Feast of Beasts. Black and white stripes cover the walls of the windowless dining hall. I can't tell where the walls end and the floor and ceiling begin. It's almost as disorienting as the moving moth spirits earlier.
Even the long dining table and chairs at the far end of the room are painted to match, creating a camouflage effect. The guests look like they're hovering in place on a striped background. I feel lost, yet strangely at home, like a flea who has taken up residence on a zebra. A giant chandelier mounted on the cathedral ceiling illuminates our surroundings with swathes of swinging light. I step across the threshold with Morpheus on my right side, my hand curved atop the back of his. Jeb stays two steps behind on my left. In elfin code, it's unseemly for a knight to have any interaction with his charge, other than to protect her life should the moment arise. We can't touch, we can't exchange glances, we can't even speak to each other, or we'll blow his cover.
Your attention, please, Morpheus says to the guests.
Gossamer peers out from under his hair again, and the self-playing harp falls silent along with the dinner chatter and clatter.
Miss Alyssa of the Other Realm.
He turns to me and holds out my arm.
These are the solitary of our kind, born neither of the Red Court nor White. We, the wild and woolly of Wonderland, welcome you to the Feast of Beasts.
My hand tightens on his as the guests gawk at me, food dripping from their snouts. Gathered around the long table is a mishmash of creatures, some clothed,
others naked. Though they vary in size and gender, they're all more bestial than humanoid. One looks like a hedgehog, prickles and all, except she has the face of a sparrow. She must be shy, because she rolls into a ball upon our entrance, then bounces under the table. A pink woman with a neck as long as a flamingo's ducks down and gives the hedgehog a thump with her head, sending the ball out from under the table to the other side of the room. There are more creatures, some with wings, some that are part frog, part plant, with wriggling vines growing out of their skin, others as bald as seals with the bodies of primates and the woolly heads of lambs. The one thing they all have in common is their interest in me. I'm the focal point of 50-some sets of eyes. A few muttered whispers break the hush.
It's her. Spitting image she is.
I heard she drained the ocean with a sponge. A sponge. Cunning and imaginative, that. They all know about my relationship to Alice and what I'm here to do. Talk about epic fail potential. My nerves combine with the stenches of food, animal dander, and musk. Dizziness spins the room. Jeb's behind me. I know he'll catch me if I faint. I also know that if I do, it will ruin everything. I have to stay strong for Allison. So I pull it together and glance from one strange face to the next, curious which creature came to collect the fan and gloves on behalf of the Duchess. Morpheus leads me to the table and slides out a chair at the right-hand side of his seat at the head. There's a huge mallet propped beside the table's leg, and one underneath every chair down our row. He settles me next to a small, wiry creature that looks like an albino ferret wearing a black baseball helmet on his head, though his serpentine eyes and forked tongue detract from any cuteness factor. Jeb takes his place behind me, just out of reach. Morpheus stands at his chair and tips his hat to the guests, black wings arched high.
I apologize for my lateness, but on the bright side, our avenging angel has come at last. So, let the celebration begin.
After a smattering of applause from our guests, Morpheus hands his hat off to Gossamer and several other sprites. They hang it on the chair's arm as Morpheus sits, folding his wings over the back like a cloak. Gossamer perches on his shoulder, and everyone else resituates with a creak of wood and a rustle of fur and fabrics. Chatter resumes, along with smacks, gulps, and slurps.
Have a taste, love.
Morpheus motions to my plate. Then he turns to have a hushed conversation with a green piggish beast who sits at his left across the table from me. The pig wears a gray pinstriped suit, complete with fur cuffs. His sleeves stretch down, barely covering lobster claws. He smiles and I cringe at his teeth, black and round like peppercorns. On my plate, a handful of goldfish flap around the center, gasping.
Twinkle,
the ferret next to me says in a flute-like voice. He points a clawed finger at the fish. Are we supposed to eat these raw? I ask him. I've never been a fan of sushi.
Sushi?
He asks. Never mind. I turn from the goldfish to him, grateful for the distraction. So, your name is Twinkle? He tilts his head, his shiny helmet glinting as he gestures to the fish skeletons on his plate.
Twinkle.
Nauseated, I stare again at my own thrashing dinner. Their fish eyes sag in their sockets, looking right at me. Pity and revulsion twist in my stomach. I can't even imagine my pet eels out of water and unable to breathe. Do the moths and bugs I use in my mosaics suffer like this when they die? Why have I never cared enough to ask?
Twinkle,
the creature next to me repeats. He lifts a silver spoon almost as big as himself, stands in his chair, and proceeds to thwack several of my fish on their heads, knocking them dead.
Twinkle them! See?
His forked tongue flits past his lips.
Oh no, please!
On impulse, I reach for my goblet to pour liquid over the remaining live fish so they can breathe again. The mixture oozes out slowly, coating the fish in a gritty glob that smells of cinnamon and apple juice. Desperate, I dig the smothered fish out of the mess, getting the goop under my fingernails and into the weave of my gloves. Everyone's looking at me again, but I'm too disgusted to care.
"What is this?" I snap at Morpheus.
His eyes gleam.
"Do you not put sand in the cider where you're from?"
He smirks. I remember seeing that same teasing smile in dreams as a child, how it used to mean we were about to do something daring and fun. But now there's an edge of malice behind it. What could have happened to change him from the playful boy to the troubled man he is today?
"Would you rather try the wine?" he asks.
At the other end of the table, the primate netherlings are capturing the wine bottles, which float in midair, and stuffing bits of wool from their lamb-like heads into the bottlenecks to weigh them down. They then pass the wine around for toasts. Crinkling my nose, I refuse the offer.
"Ah, poor, delicate little blossom."
Morpheus takes a napkin, gently grasping my left hand.
"Let us clean you up, eh?"
Gossamer lights on the table next to my right hand and proceeds to help with unnecessary roughness, yanking at my gloves and pinching my knuckles while grimacing at me. In contrast, Morpheus smooths the sandy mixture from my fingertips. Heat flares from the contact.
There's heat behind me, too, from Jeb's gaze.
I don't have to see it. I sense it. He warned Morpheus not to touch me during the feast.
"Pity we were so preoccupied in the Hall of Mirrors earlier and missed the appetizer,"
Morpheus says as he glances at Jeb smugly.
"You would have loved the spider soup, being so adept at wounding insects."
I wince.
"Even more a pity."
He leans in and whispers low so only I can hear.
"That you would waste your kisses on a man who fantasizes about other girls. Little Gossamer can see inside people's minds as they're sleeping. The beautiful young woman in Jeb's dreams was not you. Interesting that he chooses now to act on hidden feelings. Down here, away from all the others, when he wants so desperately to talk you out of your own quest."
A sharp-edged shadow passes through my chest, slicing like a knife.
"Oh, but of course he's sincere,"
Morpheus continues to taunt. "It's not as if he's ever kept anything from you.
He's always been honest."
Jeb's move to London with Taylor fills my mind, leaving me as sullen as the dark clouds behind our host's eyes. Watching my reaction, Morpheus smiles.
"Yes. A man who never lies will never break your heart."
Planting a kiss atop the back of my glove, he tosses down the napkin and releases me. Gossamer glowers at me before she flits back to his shoulder. Tears build behind my eyes. I will them not to fall, but can't will away the sick ache in my stomach. Morpheus must be right. Jeb's never mentioned having feelings for me in our real lives. He's still with Taylor up there, and dreaming of her down here. Morpheus stands and returns his hat to his head, all business now.
"Enough playing with these bland morsels. Waiters, bring out the main course!"
Some movement along the walls provides a momentary distraction from my heartache. It's as if pieces of the plaster are sprouting legs. Only when they peel from their places and slink off to one of the adjoining rooms do I realize they're a band of human-sized chameleons with suctioned toes. When the zebra-striped lizards return, bulbous eyes twisting in every direction, they carry a platter garnished with dried fruit and something that resembles a duck. It's plucked and roasted, but still has its head intact. A warm, herbal scent tickles my nose. At least it's cooked.
"May I introduce you all to the main course?"
Morpheus spreads out an arm with dramatic flair.
Dinner. Meet your worthy adversaries, the hungry guests.
My tongue dries to sandpaper as the bird's eyes pop open and it hobbles to stand on webbed feet, flesh brown and glistening with glaze and oil. There's a bell hung around its neck, and it jingles as the duck bows to greet everyone. This cannot be happening. Every nerve in my body jumps, urging me to turn to Jeb, but I can't. Morpheus drags the heavy mallet from beside his chair and pounds it on the table like a judge's gavel.
Now that we're all acquainted, let the walloping begin!
Gossamer launches from Morpheus's shoulder and leaves the room with the other sprites as mass confusion erupts. All the guests leap to their feet, mallets in hand, to chase the jingling duck. He's surprisingly agile and bobs out of the way, maneuvering among serving platters, dishes, and silverware.
What are you doing? I ask Morpheus. I've never seen anything so savage.
Savage?
The green pig snorts an answer for him.
You act as though we're a bunch of animals.
His peppercorn teeth form a sneer.
Stop thinking with your head, Alyssa.
Morpheus leans low across the table, his blue hair swinging forward at his shoulders.
Think with this instead.
He taps a finger above my navel. It's a good thing Jeb can't see from his angle, or he'd break Morpheus's hand off. My stomach? I barely breathe the question.
Your gut. Instinct. The deepest part of you knows that this,
he motions to the chaos around us,
is how it should be. That same part of you that prompted you to look for me and step through the mirror. The same part that gave you the power to animate your mosaic at home.
His words send me back to that moment in my hallway when the cricket's dead legs kicked and the glass beads glowed. Is he saying my curse magic caused that, too?
You understand the logic behind the illogical, Alyssa. It's in your nature to find tranquility amid the madness. And that's what we're doing here. We're giving our food a fighting chance.
He winks at me.
Now, if you'll pardon us, my comrade and I have some bartending to do.
He and the pig leave the table. Morpheus bends down to keep their heads together as they stroll to the far wall.
Twinkle!
The white ferret shouts. He scrambles onto the table with spoon in hand, only to get toppled by the roasted duck. I catch my furry companion before he falls headfirst off the edge. His spoon jangles to the floor beside his helmet. With his cap gone, his bald scalp is revealed, the skin so thin his brain shows through. He doesn't even have a skull. He snuggles in my lap.
Dadum very much, Angel Light.
Beady pink eyes study me, soft with morbid adoration. I'm so captivated by the strangeness of the creature, I don't realize a mob is coming our way, flailing their mallets in a chaotic rush for the prize. Jeb jerks my chair from the table to save me from getting pounded, while the ferret holds on to my tunic for dear life. Then Jeb sidesteps to the corner diagonally across from me, maintaining our distance. His expression strains with the effort not to make eye contact.
You know the rules,
a serpentine wolf hisses in mid-pummel, just missing the duck as it hurtles across a dinner plate.
First to ring his bell gets to carve.
A blood-curdling howl breaks the chaos as someone rips off one of the duck's legs. It drags itself free, while several of the pursuers gnaw on the ripped drumstick. The duck climbs atop a hovering wine bottle and takes to the air, all the while giggling deliriously. He taunts the others to catch him by tearing off and dropping pieces of his flesh. He wants to be eaten. A sick twinge spasms in my belly, tempting me to join in, teasing me with the thrill of the chase. My legs twitch in their desire to jump up. I suppress the impulse. Any creatures capable of flight follow with mallets in hand, floating over everyone else. The grounded ones scuttle to the tabletop or rush along the floor, tumbling over dishes and chairs in hopes someone will knock the main course down to their level. I cover my mouth to keep from screaming or laughing hysterically. It could go either way at this point. I'm beginning to enjoy the madness. That's not good. Not at all. My new ferret friend pats my fingers, his tiny pink pads soft against my skin.
Hail be Angel Light,
his flute-like voice soothes.
Hail and agreeable. Sort and sing. Be royal smiles for me.
He grins, his sharp teeth glimmering beneath the chandelier's glow. His canines are as long as rattlesnake's fangs. My instinct stirs, and I do what Morpheus suggested. I follow it. I tickle the creature's left ear like I would a puppy's. He purrs in response. I shut out everything. The pursuit of dinner, the crazy hoots and laughter from the animated guests, the affectionate furry creature in my lap, as I watch Morpheus pass the fan and gloves to the pig. In exchange, the pig slips Morpheus a small white bag tied with a black ribbon. Then the pig snatches up his mallet and waddles off to join the festivities, which have moved to the kitchen. The clang of pots and pans in the other room echoes loudly in the sudden hush of the abandoned dining hall. I startle as the ferret grasps both sides of my face.
Dust sweet, Angel Light.
He licks my chin with his cold, forked tongue, then drops to the floor, snagging his spoon and helmet.
Twinkle, Gustin be gone.
With that, he returns his helmet to his head and runs into the kitchen. Once he disappears, only Jeb, Morpheus, and I remain in the room. Free of prying eyes, I look at Jeb from my seat, and he stares back from against the wall, neither of us moving. A strange pressure starts to penetrate my chin where the ferret's snaky tongue left a wet mark. It worms into my skin and winds into my mouth, both warm and cold at once. I swallow the taste of it, bitter yet sweet, like a confection made of tears. The sensation doesn't stop there. It flows into my throat, then my chest, pinching with a deep, profound sadness. At first, I hurt for myself and Jeb, for how there's still so much between us to work out. Then I hurt for Allison and Dad and their lost years together. I hurt for Queen Red and her broken heart, and for Ivory, who's always suffered in solitude, now locked alone in the prison hatbox. The sadness escalates, as if all the grief of the world converges in one spot, just above my heart. I ache to cry, ache so much it takes my breath away. Jeb rushes to me, crouching at my feet.
Al, it's all right, it's over.
He feels my forehead.
You're so cold. Say something, please.
I can't respond for fear I'll start to weep uncontrollably.
She's turning blue,
Jeb shouts at Morpheus.
That ferret freak did something to her. Tot. Don't get yourself worked into a snit, pseudo-elf.
Morpheus tosses his hat onto a chair and joins us. He bends over me. Jeb reluctantly inches aside to give him space. Morpheus lifts my chin and tilts my face from side to side, like a physician conducting a checkup.
You are fortunate he liked you, little plum. The Mustella netherlings are notorious for their tempers, and they have the venom of 1,000 asps in one snap of their canines. Their heads are soft and vulnerable. Had you touched him anywhere but his ears, he would have taken it as a threat. You would be writhing on the floor right now, choking on your last excruciating breath.
I try to speak, but can't. The sadness grows steadily stronger. Each beat of my heart sucks against my ribcage like a leech. I want to slide to the floor, curl into a ball, and cry forever. But I'm frozen in place. You sat her next to that deadly thing on purpose, didn't you?
Jeb asks, though it's more of a shout.
To punish her for kissing me, you sick son of a...
He attacks Morpheus, spinning him into his wings and slamming his back onto the tabletop. Plates and utensils shake at the impact. Forearm pressed against our host's larynx, Jeb holds him down.
Fix her now.
There's nothing to fix. He gave her a gift.
Morpheus grunts as Jeb's arm grinds into his throat. He tries to break free, but Jeb has him wrapped so tightly in his wings he can't move.
If you'll let me up,
he grits out the words,
I shall show you.
Snarling, Jeb pulls away and kneels beside me again, taking my limp hand. He curls each of my fingers through his.
Come on, skater girl. Stay with me, okay? Whatever's going on inside your head, don't let it win.
The worry pinching his features piles onto my already weighted chest and suffocates me. He needs me to answer him, but if I open my mouth to respond, I'll wail like a banshee until I'm an empty husk.
Give me some room.
Morpheus crouches down and Jeb eases back while keeping our fingers laced. Morpheus holds a cloth napkin close to my face.
Let it out, love. I know it feels like a dam will burst, but I assure you, one tear and you'll be right as raindrops.
It isn't possible. One tear will never be enough. I double over. A keening cry erupts from my throat, so deep it strains my vocal cords and hollows my abdomen. The cry ends in a sob, and then one single tear streams down my left cheek. Just like that, I'm myself again. I squeeze Jeb's hand. Morpheus ties the napkin around what looks like a clear glass marble, though it's soft and pliant like a bath oil bead.
This is yours.
That's my tear? I ask.
It's a wish. Your new little friend has the gift of invocation. They only give out one in their lifetime, and he chose you. I shall keep it safe for now. You're not quite ready to wield this much power.
Tucking the napkin into his jacket, our host starts to stand, but Jeb grabs his elbow and stalls him on one knee.
No way. You give it to her now. Give it to her, and she can use it to wish us both home.
Morpheus pulls free.
And leave the curse unbroken? Besides, I'm afraid it's not quite that simple. For this can only be used for her and her alone. She must be the subject of the wish. For she's the one who cried it. No one else can ride its power, so it cannot carry you home as well. If you're both to get back, the portals are your only chance.
Jeb and I exchange frowns. I'll wish for more wishes, I offer. Morpheus laughs.
Oh, of course you would, just like Alice did. She asked for an endless supply of wishes. Then her tears wouldn't stop falling. That's how the ocean was born in the first place. We almost never got that fountain stopped. If you try to outsmart magic, there's always a price to be paid.
Morpheus pushes to his feet. I catch his wrist. You had me sitting next to him for a reason. You wanted me to get this wish. Why? Silent, he loosens the cravat tied around his neck in a relaxed gesture while holding my gaze. The left side of his mouth tweaks into a half-smile.
Hey.
Jeb raises our joined hands and presses his thumb against my sternum to get my attention. My heart beats against the pressure, remembering his caresses in the mirrored hall.
You were turning blue, Al. That same ferret snake could have just as easily killed you. This creep took a chance with your life purely for his entertainment. He didn't have any noble motives. The Mustella Netherlings are exceptional judges of character,
Morpheus intones.
I knew Alyssa would rise to the occasion. I've complete faith that she can fend for herself. You, on the other hand,
Can't seem to grasp that concept.
Jeb helps me up from the chair and pulls me in for a hug. It feels good to be in his arms, even if I'm unsure of his motives. Our host settles his hat into place.
Bless me that I didn't eat. Elsewise, I'd be squeamish at such a nauseating display.
Jeb kisses my forehead to spite Morpheus. I pull back, because I'd rather he kiss me for myself. The pig. I offer up a change of conversation. I'm in no mood to play referee to any more of their wrestling matches.
Yes,
Morpheus answers without breaking his scowling match with Jeb.
The pig is in fact a hobgoblin, born to the Duchess.
Bits and pieces of Lewis Carroll's story drop into place. Someone was making soup for the Duchess with lots of spices. That's why the fan and gloves smelled like pepper. And she had a baby that became a pig. So, what did he give you in exchange for the gloves and fan? Morpheus holds up the small white bag.
The key for waking Herman Hattington at the tea party. Free of charge.
He hands it to me, and Jeb starts to work at the ribbon. Morpheus's thumb flattens on the bow.
You don't want to do that. It is the most potent and priceless black pepper this side of the Nether Realm, and you've only enough for one dose.
Jeb's forehead wrinkles.
Black pepper? What kind of subpar magic is that?
Before Morpheus can answer, a horde of sprites floods the dining hall, fluttering in from the main door.
Master, we have company,
Gossamer cries.
Bad company.
Go,
Morpheus says to Jeb, bending down to grab a mallet. Jeb tucks the bag of pepper into his pocket, then takes my hand. We've only taken two steps toward the secret exit when a deck of cards, each one complete with six stick-like legs and arms, marches through the main door. The card guards keep pouring in until the walls are lined with them. On closer examination, these guards have bugs' faces with trembling antennae, and their paper-thin torsos are actually flattened shells, jagged at the edges and painted red and black to resemble suits of cards. With their oddly jointed limbs and piercing mouthparts crisscrossed at their mandibles, they look more like insects than cardboard. All these years I've been killing bugs, and now karma's here to make me pay. In spades. The bugs separate into suits. Five hearts and five clubs on one side, five spades and five diamonds on the other, with rabid white in their center. The sprites, tiny and helpless, look down on the situation from where they're gathered around the chandelier. A red waistcoat and matching gloves hang off Rabid's short, skeletal frame. One hand holds a trumpet, and the other a rolled-up scroll. He tilts his antlered head to blow three loud blasts from the instrument. Then, with a flick of his wrist and a rattle of bones, he throws open the parchment.
Alyssa Gardner of the Human Court is hereby beckoned to the presence of Queen Grenadine of the Red Court.
His glittery pink eyes turn up, locking on me.